Let's see. So tonight we are in chapter 8 of How to Cook Your Life from the Zen Kitchen to Enlightenment by Dogen and Uchiyama. And this is my favorite chapter of the book. I mean, a lot of the other ones are great, but this is part of this chapter has this is what has stuck in my mind more than just about any other message. So he starts start off by reading a couple passages that he shares on page 62 from the Shushogi. And the Shushogi is a compilation of some of the main teachings of Dogen that was actually put together in, like, I can't remember exactly when, like 1890 or something, by Soto Zen, a couple of Soto Zen priests. So kind of like a little, encapsulated Dogen fascicle. So these are, and they're drawn from other Dogen essays, so they are found in various places. But it says there's two passages. First is, since everything is impermanent, there is nothing that can be relied upon. Like a dewdrop on a blade of grass along the path that vanishes quickly, who knows when this life will end? This body is surely not my possession. Life, changing in time, does not stop even for an instant. So, then the second passage, a little bit later. Ultimately, the law of cause and effect operates clearly and impartially apart from my will. Without exception, one who commits evil actions falls, while one who performs good prospers. So he points out how these are two very different statements. And he goes on to describe if you, the kind of life that you might live if you only focused on the first statement, on impermanence. So he talks about this guy, it's just like a caricature story, I guess, of a guy who just awakens to his own life and starts thinking about what he should do with it. He figures everything is impermanent, life is short, and who knows when you're going to die. So he concludes that the best way to live is just to have fun, have adventures, whatever. He like sleeps around, gets venereal disease, has TB, decides why not rob a bank. Now he's a criminal, he goes to jail, then he's an ex-convict. So it's just, he's kind of, he ruins his life, right? Because he's just live for today, doesn't really care about the consequences of his actions. So that was an example. He says there's actually a Japanese term for this, donken. So living just as if life is impermanent. Everything is empty. What is there to be achieved? There's only this moment, enjoy it. And so then he said the second, if you just focus on the second phrase, the second teaching, which is all about cause and effect. If you do something unskillful or harmful, there will be negative consequences. If you do good, there will be good consequences. So he examples, however, a man who sees only in terms of cause and effect, who thinks that life is all, that all life is about is acquisition of money and health, and devotes his life to that purpose alone, may die in an instant, in a traffic accident. No matter how strong he has become through exercise and bodybuilding, it is going to be of no use against a dump truck. So this is Joken, the way lived as if only this moment. Or no, it's only cause and effect is relevant. So we look after our physical well-being at all costs. Perhaps we hoard our money instead of spending it, enjoying it, helping others, for instance, because of, you know, we're saving for that inevitable rainy day. Maybe we're a workaholic, something like that. We're very focused on cause and effect and achieving goals. And so Uchiyama points out that both are extremes, both are one-sided. So I wanted to reflect on and just open it up for discussion in terms of some ways that you have witnessed or experienced that involve like living according to Dongken, that view that you can't hold on to anything, everything is ultimately empty and impermanent. Do I hear the background noise of voices in my office? My neighbors are playing music. I can't imagine it's very loud. Can people hear me all right? Okay. I can't do anything about their... They're out having fun. It's a good thing. So examples in our own lives or that we've witnessed, let's see. All right, well, I'll go shut my door. Hold on. How's that? Huh. I can't imagine it getting any quieter in here. And if it does get quieter, it's going to be really hot. All right. So ways that we have witnessed or experienced living according to Dongken, the view that you can't hold on to anything. Everything is ultimately empty and impermanent, so you might as well just enjoy yourself. So I don't know if you can think of any examples of people, ways that you observe people living, people you know, maybe yourself. An example of this. And I guess in a kind of negative way, right? In a sense where maybe that, you know, over too far over to the side, ignoring cause and effect for the sake of enjoyment.
Yeah, for me, a big one is just our favorite topic, climate change. You know, that's huge in terms of, I think, denial, you know. I think there's a element of denial in what you're talking about as well. There's also kind of a nihilistic sort of defeatism around, like nothing really matters, so why should I do anything kind of thing, you know? So it's, yeah. It's real easy to kind of, I think, conflate that way of thinking with impermanence sometimes for some folks, maybe myself even sometimes. So, yeah.
Yeah, I guess I know what you mean. Like, it's an interesting question. Is there any difference? Because that kind of fatalism almost of, oh, well, you know, there's been lots of extinctions on this planet. Maybe humans will disappear. So, who cares? Like, really? Yeah. Guess I think about the abuse or overuse of intoxicants and those kinds of things. Just, you know, the only thing that matters is how I feel this moment and kind of screw the karmic consequences.
I think a long time ago when I used to smoke, that was almost kind of what it was like, because people would give you all this, like, you are killing yourself right now. And you're like, yeah, but I'm going to die anyway, so I might as well enjoy this cigarette right now. And like, I'd rather die happy smoking. It's like these things you told yourself. And it was kind of like, I don't know. That kind of makes me think of like really clearly something you're doing is not good, but you're enjoying it. So you, but you just kind of keep on keeping on. I quit though, just for the record.
I think with human beings, when we figure, oh, well, why not risk something because it's impermanent, then you could go in the other direction and be very outstanding in your whatever your project is for the climate, even if it seems like you don't have a big support group. But what are you risking? I mean, my goodness. I heard a brief interview on Outlook, that's BBC, and this Indian man said he lived in a pretty small village in Himalayas or in the foothills. And he said what people had been doing in early spring, they would build their own glaciers, like an ice stupa. And it would, of course, eventually melt, but because it was in that shape and man-made, they can put it where they wanted to, as it melted, it irrigated their farms, their gardens, later in the summer, because it melted slowly. And his point was, okay, no one else thought that was a good idea other than the villagers, because they knew it worked. And he ended with saying to people in the cities, if you live more simply, then we can simply stay here in the mountains. So, you know, if you risk a crazy idea, what have you got to lose? Of course, they'd been doing that for a couple of generations.
Sweet. And then, I guess, in the other side of it, how about ways in which we live according to the opposite view, that really, in order to be happy and secure, to avoid pain and ruin, what that means is you have to have goals and strive after goals and work really hard and if that's the way that you see life. Then what are some of the traps you fall into? Gaffel?
I think some of the athletes we see kind of fall into that trap. They try very hard and they make a lot of money. I thought maybe they fit in the other category, but I think because they strive so hard and they become so focused, you know, they make a lot of money and such, but, you know, I don't think they're considering the consequences of their sport because of the physical toll it takes on them. But, I think they're an example of that total driven grasping aspect.
I think I've always lived with goals, but it hasn't been after money. You know, I was a teacher and my goal was always to help the kids and then to be a good mother with my family. You know, and other goals I have, but they're not I always think they're good goals. Is that something different?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, because I don't think this is limited to just materialistic goals, but maybe how we relate to the goals.
Because I mean, goals can give meaning to your life. I mean, you know, deeper meaning.
I guess what happens when maybe we're just too far over to the goal-oriented side, the results-oriented side.
When you're constantly choosing the plan without checking in with yourself, it's very easy to slowly but surely drift out of touch with your own emotions, your own thoughts and feelings. It's very easy to become suppressive of yourself when you're constantly hanging on to a plan that is supposed to take the place of emotional maturity and vulnerability and things like that.
Many years ago, I had career goals. I set the bar really high, and I worked really hard for no reason other than to make a name for myself in my field. And I found that that created a ton of stress. And then finally I realized that if I just took a step back and just did the work for the enjoyment of the work, it totally took away the stress and my work became more fulfilling that way.
Oh, you're jumping ahead to like, how do we practice with this?
Yeah, I think we've talked about this in other contexts, but I think when we get fixated on the end result, you know, with our goals and our desire for achievement, that there's all this stuff that happens in between, like life, you know, and and so we might miss a lot of opportunities to be a little more, I guess, improvisational maybe, or spontaneous, or even just aware. You know, because we get obsessed, we get maybe an idea in our heads and we kind of like, that becomes kind of a tunnel vision or a blinder. So, yeah.
Or I guess one of my points was maybe, is a goal worthwhile if there's no joy in attaining it or in the effort that it takes to attain it?
And is a goal like, are our goals attainable? Like in a sense, if we're always striving and there's not really a point at which they are attained, then that sense of kind of stress and being driven and obsessed just continues indefinitely. Kind of like what Franklin is saying, like you never stop to enjoy the journey or anything else. Also noticed a much greater impatience and irritability when there's a lot of focus on the goal and the striving and the achievement or something. Not even when it's really positive stuff. We're not talking about like even when I'm trying to make a lot of money or something like that. It just, you know, even something quite quite generous or noble.
Well, I think we're a very goal-oriented society, and we respect people that have these goals, whether they're doctors. And so it's sort of taken this whole COVID thing for us to just appreciate everyday people. You know, the people at the grocery store. But you can think in this society that you're not worthwhile if you don't have these big goals that you have achieved and you're just living a nice life. because I think of someone I know in my family who hasn't been able to achieve her goals, and so she's miserable rather than just enjoying, you know. I don't know.
Yeah, I think Deborah alluded to this. It's a lot about the process. I mean, I think goals are fine, but you have to kind of get away from the idea of results a little bit and really just kind of do it for the sake of whatever the thing is that you're doing. And so that's a good balance between sort of living in the moment and still, you know, attaining something, whatever that something is. And by the way, I really like this chapter too, because that's something I've, at least maybe not emotionally, but intellectually find challenging in Buddhism, is this idea of living in the moment yet having goals. Like, because if we don't have any goals, so, you know, I don't see myself running out, committing crimes, getting venereal disease and all that. But on the other hand, you know, it's, you know, he takes it a little bit to the extreme, but there is a version of that, right? Which maybe not so extreme, which is not so good either. And so this chapter is good, has been good for me, because it helps me kind of like refocus on the idea of process of like whatever it is that you're doing, you know, to have, you know, aspirations, but to not get caught in the end result of those aspirations. So it's useful. So good chapter.
Mark? Cole?
Oh, unmute.
Yeah, I really relate to what Franklin just said. I don't think we can live without intention, aspiration, and planning. It's a human thing, you know. Uh-huh. Even without grandiose goals. I mean, if my plan is to cook a meal for my partner to have when she comes home tonight, it's still a plan, it's still a goal. I think the trick is, whatever the outcome is, not to be attached to it. You know, it's okay to have preferences. It's okay to plan. You've got a plan to go on a holiday. You've got a plan to stay well. It's part of living. It's being stuck to the outcomes. Plan all you like, but don't be attached to them occurring. My life certainly turned out very different almost every day the way I planned it. It doesn't mean that plans and goals weren't part of that. I just life always turned out different than I had intended. And to be cool with that.
Yeah. Like that. Yeah. So yeah, Uchiyama talks about these two extremes, the Donken and Joken. Just in the moment, karma doesn't matter, or being very wrapped up in cause and effect and activity and goal. As two extremes, and we're aiming for the middle way. And as he reminds us, the middle way does not mean halfway, nor does it mean some sort of wandered down, defeated compromise or shallow eclecticism. Rather, middle way means to accept this contradiction of impermanence and cause and effect within your own life. To accept this contradiction means to forbear and overcome it without trying to resolve it. At its very essence, life is contradiction, and the flexibility to forbear and assimilate contradiction without being beaten down by it, nor attempting to resolve it, is our life force. So, yeah, this is just one of many examples of where the middle way is called for. And the middle way is, sometimes I often think of, like, maybe instead of middle way, we might say the third way, or the other way? Because it's not, like you said, it's not just like halfway in between. Like you kind of have goals and you kind of live in the moment. We think it has to be this way or this way or somewhere in between, but the Buddhist way, this third way, this other way, is like, no, you don't necessarily have to get stuck in either extreme. Like the reality can look very different, something that hasn't even occurred to you. So how do we actually do this? How do we take care of our lives, work toward goals, keep ourselves healthy, create beautiful and useful things, help other people, but not get so caught up in our goals that we miss the present moment, that we lose sight of what really matters, that we lose sight of that truth that everything is impermanent and empty, and there's really just this moment. And how do we acknowledge that emptiness and rest in things as it is, my favorite term for it, but also not lose our sense of aspiration and responsibility? I mean, so that is a definite, that's a little on one side too far as well. If we're just each moment, each day, and it's not so much like we're saying, I don't think most of us are on the verge of going out and robbing banks or anything like that. Although, I mean, that certainly applies. But it's a little more subtle. It's a little more like, what is each one of us, aside from any kind of ideal, any kind of external judgment, what do we want to make out of our lives? What do we want to have happen? What do we want to experience? And you know, do we want to live out our lives having neglected our own aspirations, our own process of discovery and growth? So how do we live each moment mindfully, recognize impermanence and emptiness, but still not lose sight of that kind of stuff? So this is just, here, this is my favorite part of the book. So this paragraph from the Tenzo Kyokan, Uchiyama shares, and then I'll share a little bit of his commentary, which is actually the part that really sticks with me. So he's describing to the cook on page 64, the Tenzo Kyokan teaches that we must prepare for the next morning the night before. So it's a lot of stuff in the instructions to the cook about planning. All officers meet in the kitchen or pantry and decide what food is to be prepared for the following day. For example, the type of rice gruel, the vegetables, the seasoning. In the Chanwon Chingui, it says, when deciding on the amount of food and number of side dishes for the morning and noonday meals, the Tenzo should consult with the other officers. When they have chosen the meals, the menus should be posted on the notice boards in front of the abbot's room, as well as in front of the study hall. When this has been done, preparations for the next morning's meal may begin. And then the Tenzo Kyokan describes a lot of stuff. It means the instructions, the Tenzo's up in the wee hours of the morning preparing for the next morning's meal. So he explains that, he said, in this matter of course passage, there's an extremely vital teaching to be found. In this world of impermanence, we have no idea what may occur during the night. Maybe there will be an earthquake or a disastrous fire. War may break out, or perhaps a revolution might erupt, or we ourselves could very well meet death. Nevertheless, we are told to prepare the gruel for the following morning and make a plan for lunch. Moreover, we are to do this as tonight's work. In preparing the meal for the following day as tonight's work, there is no goal for tomorrow being established. Yet our direction for right now is clear. Prepare tomorrow's gruel. So you are preparing tomorrow's meal as tonight's work. So does that make sense to everybody? How do you do that? What does that mean?
I feel like there's a very important word there, direction. Like maybe the important is to have direction.
That's the key thing, rather than to be focused on goals.
Yeah.
Well, as I said, you know, there may be war, there may be a disaster. I mean, the current state is an impermanent state, but you still have to do your work. I mean, you still have to feed, you still have to eat and such. So you can't base your plans on impermanence. Although, at the same time, we have to be aware of it, we have to be accepting of it.
What does it mean for our moment by moment experience? You know, what does it feel like to be doing something, to do our work? And basically, kind of by definition, right? Work involves some kind of plan or intention. Making something happen, taking care of something. So what does it mean to do some work? Without it being at all about the future, without it, you know, it's the work of this moment. How does that feel?
I suppose it starts off like you have,
you want to wash the dishes or whatever, but you know, if you're doing that, thinking about, oh, I can't wait to get this done so I can go off and do X, that's not the right way to go about it. If you just kind of pay attention to what you're doing, I don't know if like enjoy is not the right word, but appreciate what you're doing. I mean, either way, the dishes will get done, right? So, yeah, I think the idea is just to be aware of what you're doing. And so you have that direction of trying to get the dishes done, but it's not necessarily the goal you have in mind when you're doing them.
I think, say the goal is to become a famous ballet dancer. And that's, your long-term plan, and you work very hard at it. And today, you're learning a new dance, you're learning a new move, and you aren't thinking about being a famous ballet dancer. And you're not thinking about how you're going to pay for your student. You're thinking about intricate moves you are learning, and you are totally absorbed, and that is the moment. Well, that's part of your path, part of your long-term goals. In that moment, all that's really important to you is that one step in the path. So each moment flows into another moment, and they're all part of your life, and we all, recognize we have to have plans for that life. But each moment being part of that life, you need to be also very aware of that moment.
Shoketsu, were you going to chime in?
I was just going to say that there's something very lovely about being able to focus on something fully. I'm at a place where my career is past, so I'm more likely to be able to enjoy a task or event where I can just focus on it. And I, you know how we talk about it, it's very Zen. It's very Zen work to be weeding the garden, for example, or preparing a meal, and only that, just focus on that. It's, there's something appealing about that. But I, in the past, I was a lot. I was driven in my career. So I know what others of you were talking about. But now I like just being focused.
There's a good point there. Because I am still in my career, and oh boy, is that great at hitting buttons. Oh, great, is that great at provoking. And I keep feeling like it can't possibly be a balancing act to balance planning for the future against living in the present, because who could possibly maintain that balancing act when they're getting poked and provoked all the time, right? They have to be effortlessly together at the same time, right? The thing that is being done right now is the taking care of the future. It can't be a task. I don't think that it can be managed as a task. So in those rare moments when I do manage to pull it off, and it's because I'm not getting provoked quite as strongly as I usually am, it's simple. It's marked by that lack of desperation and complexity and trying to stay in control of the future that isn't here yet.
I don't know, that's, I've kind of jumped around with a few different things, but the one that just popped into my head was one of the tasks I was doing with our preschool kids last year was we were growing apple trees from seed. But these trees will not produce an apple for like 5-6 years maybe, right? Like it's like a serious long distance. So the goal of doing this couldn't be to get an apple in the future, because it's just like so far out. They're probably not gonna. So we talked about, you know, why we do this and the joy we take in just planting things together and doing this together, that sort of thing, in this moment, with clearly the goal, I guess, was to grow a tree. But if your goal is to get an apple, that was just, you know, if that was what you're focusing on, you were going to meet nothing but disappointment, because that's a long ways away for a 3-year-old to wait for an apple. So, yeah, made me think of that.
Sweet.
Yeah, I very I don't know that I would even call it goal oriented, in the sense of having some kind of specific worldly goal or something like that. I guess, I mean, in the sense of, you know, there's a task I want to, for instance, I'm going to install a new composter. One that I'm going to completely cover with hardware wires so that the rats can't get into it. It's going to be a little bit of a project. And, you know, I can do that in two different ways, right? I can do that, like, I've got a certain amount of time. I got to get this done. Darn it, the staples aren't going to the wood. Like, you know, like, mostly just trying to get it done. Or, which, you know, I mean, it's something that I think comes with practice, is, yeah, like, it's like you don't do anything differently, right? Your actions are the same. But you can just make it the work of this moment, I guess is like the best, the way that he put it. It's like, yes, you are doing this thing, this aim toward a goal, but that's what you are doing at this moment. So you can enjoy it just as, in just as centered a way as Zazen, except you're doing something instead of just sitting there. So I was thinking that we could go into breakout groups for a few minutes and reflect on if you have anything in your life where this attitude, where you're doing work, you're doing some kind of task, but this this sense of this being the work of this moment, of being able to be energetically involved, you know, in enjoying the work, or even being eager about the outcome, but somehow not caught in the outcome, you know, that this is just to be kind of centered in the activity. And I think most of us have we have certain things that we do, and I guess in some senses this is a little different, because I was just thinking, a lot of folks, when we talk about moments that you were naturally mindful, people mention, you know, being in the great outdoors and hiking and stuff like that. But this is a little different because this is specifically about work, specifically about tasks that have some measure of a plan or a goal attached to them, as opposed to just kind of meditative activities. But I think most of us have some kind of task that we do that where this comes to us somewhat naturally. And I think some of you have heard me share this story before, where I think my teacher noticed how like just driven I was all the time. And I mean, she didn't particularly say anything to me about it, but then at some point she said she knew that I had it in me to be a monk when she saw me watering the plants, the house plants. I guess maybe because the goal was so simple, just for me, I wasn't at all like, I'm going to grow beautiful house plants. It's like the plants, I notice plants and I notice when they need water. And so I was just, it was a very natural, centered, enjoyable activity. So, yeah. So hopefully we have some examples to share that are like real and evocative. And if you can't think of something, don't worry about it. Oops, sorry. Make our breakout rooms even again. Right.
Well, this was a thought I had before we went to the breakout room opportunity, but we talk about change. We talk about impermanence, and so these are things that happen to us. In a lot of cases, they are, but we can't forget that we are also agents of change ourselves, that we have the ability to change our lives, and as a group, we have the ability to change the world. So change is, you know, it's not always something that happens to us. It's not always something that's bad. We have the ability to make changes. When we're not happy, we have the ability to change our life to make ourselves happy.
Well, and I think that's actually pointing toward a deeper, well, I don't know about deeper, but a broader maybe aspect of this whole koan, which is, you know, how invested do we get in trying to bring about a better world? And it can seem like a sacrifice if we are trying to make change. I mean, that's something that's very you know, goal oriented and gets us invested and can be emotionally challenging? And do we have to give up essentially our mindfulness, our equanimity, our kind of sense of spiritual centeredness or settledness in order to get, you know, involved or work for change or something like that? And I feel like the message of this chapter is no, that it can be challenging. But for instance, in my climate work, can I really be totally dedicated and involved and not have my dedication be about succeeding? Because if my dedication is just about succeeding, I don't know that that's going to happen. And then it can be very discouraging. But if it's not about that, if it's about, I am going in this direction, I have decided. My heart tells me to go in this direction, and that's what I'm doing. And that's the work of this moment. So, I will close with a verse. We offer the merit of this practice together to all, so that they may be able to obtain the truth. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, bodhisattvas, mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, maha prajna, paramita. Thank you for being here.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Bye. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everyone.
Sleep well or eat well. For those on the other side of the world.
Thanks, Justin.